Hello everyone, I'm Liam and welcome to another episode of Exploring the NQS, a bonus series from the Early Education Show, exclusively for our Patreon supporters. So if you're listening to this, that means you're supporting the main show, which means I want to start with a big thank you. The main show will always be free, but those of you who choose to actually support us financially really, really help us out. In Exploring the NQS, I take a look at one element of the National Quality Standard, one at a time, until I've covered all 40. My background is as an early childhood educator and teacher, centre director, and I currently oversee professional learning and development for Northside Community Service, a not-for-profit early education provider based in Canberra. All right, let's get started. This week, it's element 2.2.3, child protection. It's part of Quality Area 2, Children's Health and Safety, and it's the third and final element of Standard 2.2, Safety. The description for this element is: management, educators, and staff are aware of their roles and responsibilities to identify and respond to every child at risk of abuse or neglect. All right, so what's this one all about? This to me is one of the most serious elements of the National Quality Standard. There's an incredible legal, ethical, and moral responsibility on everyone who works in children's services to get this element right and to uphold the law and regulations that underpin it. But in terms of what it's all about, really, this is about keeping children safe. It's kind of as simple and as complex as that. And it's important to remember that includes our ethical and in some states and territories, legal obligations to children outside the service and our requirement to act if we suspect that children may be at risk of harm or neglect. All right, let's take a look at this one in practice. This again, I feel like I do this introduction for a lot of the Quality Area 2 elements, but it's because I don't want to send people down the wrong path. This is another one that has a lot of very specific requirements and particularly legal requirements, this one. So this 15-minute, exploring the NQS will not give you every single understanding of child protection. So make sure after you finish listening to this, you go off and do some research, you read obviously the national law and the national regulations first, but really go and find out what your state and territory does. In practice, you know, services that do this really well, the best way to think about this is in the context of a child protection culture. And we may have heard this term culture around workplaces a lot. And I think, look, it gets overused, but I really like it in terms of child protection because what it's talking about is that it's embedded in every part of what happens. So if we think about the obvious things like ensuring that educators understand how and where to report and what to look for, but it goes right beyond that to, you know, from recruitment. So the very first time a potential educator has an interaction with the service, I would argue possibly even earlier, which is the job advertisement. You know, I love seeing advertisements that mention the fact that they are a child-safe culture because that immediately puts off people who may firstly be possibly a risk to children, but it also lets educators know right from the start that they are going to be expected to take this seriously. So during recruitment, you know, child protection questions should be in the interview questions. Child protection questions should be in the reference checks. You need to make sure if you work with the human resources team that they take this as seriously as you do. If you handle HR yourself, you make sure you include these sort of questions that will get to the heart of child safety in recruitment and induction. And induction, again, really making sure that they have a really good understanding of their child protection responsibilities. Particularly for some states and territories, including the ACT where I work, there is an additional mandatory reporting responsibility. So every state and territory has some mandatory reporting guidelines for people who work in particular sectors. Not every state and territory includes early childhood educators in this, unfortunately. That's likely to change with the advent of the Royal Commission into Institutional Responses to Child Sexual Abuse. So it's likely that will change over the next sort of 12 to 24 months. But at the moment, every state and territory is a little different. So if you're in a state or territory that has mandatory reporting responsibilities, make sure that's a big part of your induction. It is an individual responsibility for the educators, but there is an expectation that organisations and employers will support them to uphold those responsibilities. So if we go back to that idea of child protection culture, so it'll be in the induction, it'll be in, you know, probation periods, we talk about those kind of things. But really what it's about is that we are placing children at the centre of our decisions, including really tough ones. And what I mean by that is where we have to make really difficult decisions that may sometimes put us against put us up against families. So where we suspect, we have reasonable grounds to suspect that a child is at an abuse or neglect, it's very easy for, you know, for me to sit here on this end of the microphone and say, well, just report and your obligation is to the child. And I do think that's true, but I also acknowledge, you know, that that is challenging when you are working day to day with particular families, and particularly in some cases where you know families may be working really hard to turn their lives around or make changes to their family that will support their children, but you still suspect the child is at risk of abuse and neglect. You know, we have an ethical and moral obligation to report, but that is challenging. But you know, child protection culture means that children are always at the forefront of our decision making, even when those decisions are really hard. And also the really obvious one is that there is a zero tolerance approach to child harm or risk. We hope that our induction recruitment processes would weed out an employee who may cause harm to children. But another important part of that is a zero tolerance approach to when children are put at harm and risk. And that might include something that may not seem that serious, like a child being held or dragged. But, you know, that's a child being put at risk of harm. That's a child actually being harmed. So a zero tolerance approach through employment is really helpful there. So the child protection culture is the most important thing. And you can find a lot of resources online that will help you with that. Probably a starting point for me would be to look up the child safe standards that have been recommended by the Royal Commission into child sexual abuse. And there's a lot of guidance there for how to embed those sort of practices so that children are protected by everyone in the organisation and every layer of the organisation. And the next step after that child protection culture is information for me. And that really means just making sure that, you know, we as best as possible, we've provided as much information to the people who work with us and rely on us to understand their responsibilities and know what to do if they need to. And this can be really obvious things, like obviously attending training is a really, really important one. I'd really recommend face-to-face if you can manage it. I know that's not always doable for services, but if you can, that's always the best way to do it. And a lot of states and territories, people who work in the child protection space or people who used to will run training. So if you can find them, that's the way to do it. There are some online training services that you can access. And again, just look in your state or territory for those to be found. Often the community services director or the care and protection unit in your state and territory will have some online training. You know, that's a really good next step, and something I would recommend if it's available for free, and some cases they are, that's something to get every educator to do before they start with you and prove to you that they've actually gone and done that training is a really good place to start. There's also obvious things like having signs in staff rooms and places where employees gather that just remind people, you know, maybe on one page or two page their obligations under the state and territory legislation and what to look for and then how to respond to children, which is a really important part of child protection as well. There's also the information we need to provide to families as well. As we sort of talked about in the little section before this, that will always be a really tricky thing to navigate with families. But one way you can at least set the stage for that relationship is making sure, particularly for states and territories where educators are mandated to report, is that you include that in your enrollment pack. You include that information for families. You let them all know. So it's a universal approach. You're not singling out particular families. You're not suggesting that a family with a particular level of vulnerability is more likely to commit child abuse. This goes to every family that starts with you. And you let them know that all the educators who work in this space are mandated to report. And that's around keeping children safe. But then families who are enrolling know straight away that if something happens, educators, they have to report. And that, you know, may not necessarily solve really tricky conversations down the track, but it will at least set the stage for them to happen. The other thing to really think about here, and it's an area I don't think gets quite enough attention and quite enough, people looking at it, is support for educators through this process. Educators do incredibly complex, difficult jobs, you know, day in, day out, regardless of whether they're then dealing with their suspicions that a child may be at risk of significant harm. We need to make sure that educators are supported through the process of first identifying children they may feel at risk, then responding to children, and then if necessary, making mandated reports to child protection authorities. The best way to do this is kind of linking back to that first point, which is the child protection culture. If you've worked really hard to have that kind of culture in your service, you know, these sort of things should be able to be openly discussed, you know, with, and I don't mean, you know, in large groups with including random strangers and families. What I mean openly discussed in a professional context, educators feel comfortable going to their manager or their team leader or other colleagues to discuss these issues and feel safe to raise and do so. So a culture of open communication is kind of a subset of that child protection culture. And again, this is very easy for me to say from one end of the microphone. These sort of issues are really hard to talk about. No one becomes an early childhood educator to want to think about children being potentially abused or harmed or neglected. But it's really important that we do have those discussions. One of the findings of the Royal Commission into Child Sexual Abuse was exactly that, that people didn't want to be discussing or thinking about these things, and it was felt too uncomfortable often to raise these issues. We have to push past that. We have to put children at the center of the child protection process and make sure we feel comfortable to raise our concerns when we do so. It's important to remember the mandated reporting responsibilities in states and territories don't preclude that you can let your center director know. And I actually really recommend you do that. Legally, your obligation is to report to the child protection authorities, but letting your center director know means they can support you through that process. And for center directors out there, that means you can be aware of what's happening in your service, you can be aware of having particular conversations with families. So educators being supported through the process from woe to go, from suspicion to reporting, is so important. So talk with your organization if you're part of a larger organization, what support is offered to people through that process. If you're a smaller service, you know, maybe look for online guides to how that can be done. But a lot of it is just around, you know, checking in with educators, making sure they're feeling okay, letting them know that the process is confidential, so the family shouldn't necessarily know exactly what's happened, but that they can be supported through that process where they may have to engage with particular families. All right, let's have a look at some suggestions for nominated supervisors. Again, these are going to be pretty straightforward. We want to make sure that we get the nuts and bolts of this right. So the first one is, again, a simple one to say, a little bit harder to implement, is know your local legal requirements extremely well. I sort of can't overemphasize this for nominated supervisors. This element for me and the associated regulations, it probably is the most important legal, ethical, and moral responsibility you undertake as a nominated supervisor. You are pledging to ensure that you keep children safe, not only when they are with you in your service, but outside the service in the local community as well. So knowing what your responsibilities are crucial, and knowing what the responsibilities of your team are. So really, if you're uncertain in any way at the end of this little podcast, you know, go and look up your local requirements, see whether you're a mandated reporter in your particular state and territory, or whether you are it's a voluntary process. You know, look up what are the particular state and territory regulatory bodies that you have to report to. In some cases, it'll be a care and protection unit. In some cases, it'll just be a community services department. Make it an absolute priority for your work. When I took on new centre director roles back when I was centre directing, this was the first thing I thought about, is how did I make sure that every member of my team understood their responsibilities and would know what to do if they had to do it. And then the second one is about leading a child protection culture. So this is really, you know, coming from you down through your team, that you place children at the center of your decisions, even the difficult ones, that you provide regular opportunities for discussion about these issues, and that you role model talking openly about these issues and not hiding them away in the too hard basket. Really having those conversations with your team, and kind of similar to emergency management, which we talked about last week, not waiting for an incident to happen before we then broach the topic and people feel stressed and concerned, that you do it at a time when everything's okay and people feel that safety and that security to have those discussions at that time. That's, you know, the best way to sort of lead that child protection culture is to role model it. But then also, you know, find out as much information as you can. Look at the child safe standards that have been recommended by the Royal Commission. Look at the online guides that you can find. Really, take that responsibility to be the leader of that particular culture. And then the guidance for the quality improvement plan. Again, let's keep these really sort of straightforward and simple. Number one would be all educators have a thorough understanding of their child protection responsibilities. And the second one would be educators are supported to meet their legal obligations under child protection legislation. So those two are really just kind of, the first one is just around making sure people know what to do. And then second, that they're supported to do that. And that's, I think, you know, those two sides of the coin are the best way to approach those child protection issues. All right, we've now officially wrapped up another quality area. Quality Area 2 is in the can. We'll be back next week with an overview of Quality Area 2. I hope people enjoy the overview of Quality Area 1. So I think I'll keep doing those for post every Quality Area do once we've wrapped up the individual elements. So keep an eye out for that next Tuesday. Don't forget to be listening to the main show. We hope you're enjoying the early education show as well. Until next week, when we're back with our overview episode of Quality Area 2, it's goodbye from me.